Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Thursday, 12 May. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, going to be chatting with Mwalaba Mwakabela, talking that famous brands update, but also talking U.S. inflation. Henry Biddlecombe from Anchor, FANG stocks, Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Netflix, and Google after a rough start to the year. Are any of them offering some value, perhaps? And then we're chatting with PwC, the life insurer results for the year ending December. How have they handled the pandemic? How are they relative to pre-pandemic levels? This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb: SAA privatization not yet done and dusted. Yeah, we noticed this. This is the long SAA. I scratch my head. Business day, more uncertainty for Ascendus after election of dissident shareholders. The election of three new board members poses a risk that its lenders will call in their debt. And then, frankly, it's all over for Ascendus, although maybe it is already. Morning markets, lots of red. In the US, S&P down 1 2/3. NASDAQ just over 3% down. Asia, we've got Sydney off 1%. Tokyo down almost 1%. Commodities, a bit of a mixed bag. Gold, $1,854. Brent, $106.21 a barrel. Platinum, $982. Palladium, the red one, down at $2,032 an ounce. Rand, $16.13. Bitcoin, down at $28,500. Top 40 opening call, looking for about 600 points down. That's 0.9% to the red. That as 10 cent trades down 0.5% in the Hong Kong lunch break.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Turning now with Lonwaba Mkabela, portfolio manager at Perpetua. Lonwaba, appreciate the early morning. Touch off on that famous brands updated. They had a tough pandemic. Of course, they actually had a tough lead into it because of their gourmet burger kitchen, which they had bought in the UK, was a disaster. The update sort of suggests that maybe they're kind of back to normal, and certainly putting them on a price earnings of probably around high teens, which is more or less where Famous Brands has been before everything went wrong. Is there opportunity here, or is this still something to be careful of?
Hi, good morning, Simon, and good to chat to you again. Yes, it was a very strong update from Famous Brands. So I think they said they expect earnings to be about 3.50 for the full year, so that's up 7 times relative to the COVID-affected base. And in fact, if you know, in the first half they earned R1, so second half about 2.50. So if you annualize the second half, which was the more, you know, COVID-adjusted number, that's more like R5. So showing that the multiple is actually even lower, than it's kind of in the low teens. So I think it's showing that, the business did grow for many years. They had a lot of white spaces, which is why it used to trade on a very high multiple. Market's a little bit more saturated now. But actually, we think people will actually continue to kind of look for, what to call our affordable spoils, even in difficult economic times. So, they should be able to hold on to their earnings, and food inflation, ironically, will probably be good for their top line, and they tend to be able to pass it on to the franchisees. So that'll probably, allow earnings to have some element of growth.
Yeah, and I hadn't, I hadn't actually run through that. If we take H2, it's certainly closer to around, as you say, maybe a 13 or 14 forward PE, and that certainly, in Famous Brands' life, is a low number, not just except for the last couple of years of disaster from them.
That's correct, and they've also kind of gotten rid of the problematic assets in the UK. So that's,
That's cleaned out of the way. And I remember chatting with Darren Hill and about dividends, and they might actually maybe we'll see a dividend start coming through next year. That depends on debt. Their bankers have been sort of leaning on them a bit. The US inflation was the eagerly anticipated data point yesterday. Previous was 8.5. Expected was 8.1. It came bang in the middle, 8.3%. Markets didn't like it. Commodities really liked it. What's your sense on US inflation? Should we be concerned concerned, or are you in the camp that it's going to trend lower and by the end of the year it will be well above the 2% target, but probably a lot lower than it is right now?
Yes, I mean, the market is expecting a bigger decline. And I think with this number, it also was flattened by the fact that, gasoline prices actually fell month on month. So you'll remember that they peaked in the 130s and then so quite a big decline, actually. So I guess what it shows is that in the core inflation, so excluding energy and food, was 6.2, which is, which is an extremely high number. And I think what it shows is that what started out as a supply shock inflation, very narrow, has certainly become broader, to then complicate matters further, is that the labor market is actually very tight in the US. So 6 million more job openings, than people looking for jobs. So as a result, what you'd expect is that actually wage inflation will start coming through. So I'd probably say that, yes, inflation will decline from these high levels, but I think it's going to remain kind of sticky and high. Maybe to add a bit of further complexity around, it's obviously around Russia, Ukraine, as well as China's zero COVID strategy, which may exacerbate, those kind of supply chain shocks again. Yeah. So I'd say, the risk that the Fed acts more aggressively is probably high, in trying to tame this inflation.
Yeah, and I think your keyword there was that sticky. And if we've got that sticky, then I think you're spot on around the Fed perhaps getting a little more aggressive. And of course, that has been spooking the heck out of markets. Lonwabo Mokabela, portfolio manager Perpetua, appreciate the early morning time. And that's our poll today around the US inflation. Do you think it's peaked? Do you think it's going to settle here, which perhaps is almost a bigger risk in a sense where it becomes baked in? Or maybe you're thinking, nope, it is heading higher. It is not looking good at all. Have your vote, have your say on our LinkedIn and Twitter.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Turning now with Henry Biddlecombe from Anchor Capital. Henry, appreciate the early morning. FANG stocks, Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Netflix, and Google had a rough start. Although I'm looking at a chart right now which shows me year to date, and that shows Apple down 17% all the way to Netflix down 72%. But it depends how I do my chart. If I zoom out to 1 year, Apple's actually positive, Google flat, and of course Netflix still under pressure. So time frames certainly matter a lot, but we've seen a lot of selling in the first couple of months of this year so far. Are you looking at some of them and thinking these prices are ridiculous and there is now just huge value opportunity here?
Yes, I mean, I think, at an index level, the story is almost misleading. I mean, when you look at the performance of the average stock in the U.S. market, the drawdowns have been, in individual names, have been tremendous. In the S&P 500, the average stock's down by almost 25%. If you look at the NASDAQ, the average stock's down by almost 50%. it's gobsmacking, really. But when you look at the FANG stocks, ultimately, these are higher quality, more growth-oriented names.
Yeah.
And in an environment where inflation's running away and interest rates are likely to trend upwards more aggressively than anticipated, these are not the sorts of stocks that will outperform.
I get you on that, but they're also not Peloton, where things are very much going backwards. I mean, this is Apple, who are hugely growth generative. Google, I mean, Amazon, I mean, even Facebook. I mean, they've got some challenges with the new Apple security and their spending on the metaverse. But these are not sort of newbie startups. These are established brands with giant audiences and proper revenues and profits.
Well, that's exactly right, and therein lies the opportunity. we think. But part of the challenge for investors at the moment is that it's very difficult to discern between lapping issues. So in other words, when you report your results now, you're comparing yourself against a very high base coming out of the pandemic if you're a technology company. And then on the other side of it, you know, some companies may have structural issues. So, for example, Netflix subscriber growth seems to have stalled. Facebook's market penetration seems to have stalled. Amazon's e-commerce business growth seems to have slowed. So the question for investors now is, do you think these businesses have operational or structural issues, or is this just a lapping issue?
And is that then not also, and when I'm chatting with CEOs around results, I'm actually looking back at 2019 rather than the previous period to try and almost remove the pandemic. And that's not, you know, really fair to do, but it gives me a better sense of perhaps operational more than anything else.
Well, you have to do that, firstly. But again, you know, these businesses even themselves ultimately can't put a line through it and tell you exactly what relates to the pandemic and what relates to kind of a more structural growth headwinds. But, you know, when looking at this set of names, I tend to view it as an opportunity. Mm-hmm. I think that you're lapping a difficult base. I think that, you know, the sort of macro environment isn't supportive of the growth end of the market. You've had significant drawdowns in some great names, and this is probably the time when you want to start rotating into them.
And some of them, and take Netflix as the one that's had the absolute horror time. You know, they had the huge pull forward during the pandemic. Everyone signed up. And of course that starts to fade. They've also got Disney Plus suddenly coming to the market and creating some challenges there. But I'm looking at price to earnings. I mean, it's a price to earnings in the teens. I mean, that doesn't jump out at me and say expensive. Now, at $680, we could have made the argument, but at $160, this doesn't strike me, notwithstanding the challenges, as a stock that is priced to collapse.
Yeah, so I think Netflix is the most extreme example of a drawdown in this group. Mm. And I think, you know, specifically re Netflix, this really is a time to take a view on the business. And as you point out, 2020 was an incredible year for them from a subscriber additions perspective. They added 56 million subscribers that year. Mm-hmm. That's 3 years worth of subscriber growth in 1 year. So at least from my perspective, for subscriber growth to stall out over the preceding 2 years, is nothing to be concerned about. And, regarding the fundamentals, this is basically the cheapest the stock's ever been relative to profits. So if you back the story and we do, I think this is a great time to go long.
Yeah, and one thing I noticed with Netflix is they had some pricing power. They've actually put through price increases, there was a lot of debate as whether that was possible. They've managed it, and maybe they lost some subscribers, but again, not a train wreck, and that pricing power is significant. You add a dollar to every account, what's that, $200 million a month you make extra?
Yeah, well, think about the value you're getting as a consumer. Oh, yeah. You know, we're paying 900 Rand a month for DSTV premium. Cable TV in the States is a similar price. For $12 to $13, you're getting more content than you can watch in a lifetime. So I still think that it's an incredible value proposition. Mm-hmm. And just on that alone, I'm quite happy to stay a shareholder.
We'll leave it there. Henry Buttercombe, Anchor Capital, talking the FANG stocks. Henry, as always, really appreciate the time and the early morning insights.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At StanLib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Joining now with Devold van den Berg. He's insurance and accounting partner at PwC. Devold, appreciate the early morning time. You issued a report looking into local life insurers for the results year ending December. Discovery, Liberty, Momentum Metropolitan, Old Mutual and Sanlam. If we look at 2021 compared to 2019, so pre-pandemic, a bit of a mixed bag. IFRS earnings are up, but perhaps more importantly, value of new business, margins on that new business, both under pressure, embedded values also down. They're, in my sense, not out of the woods.
Good morning, Simon. Yes, I think the pandemic has hit the insurers hard. I think we decided not to compare 2020 to 2021 because 2020 was such a tough year for them. But they've come through it quite well. You know, we've looked at margins over a number of years, And we've been seeing their margins decline since 2013. And even though volumes have increased quite significantly to pre-pandemic levels, the insurers still haven't yet been able to fully get the margin on the business in 2021 up to the levels of pre-COVID. But overall, a good result for them. I think, like you say, the IFRS earnings are right back up there. But yeah, COVID hit them hard, but they came through it well.
They did come through it well. But I mean, you know, a pandemic, the first in 100 years. I mean, we have to look at these results with that in mind. You made the point that margins on new business had been trending lower ahead of the pandemic, and that I suspect it's been, you know, we've had a tough economy for a while. We've had the high unemployment, inflation's been fine, interest rates even before the pandemic weren't massive of a concern, but GDP just hasn't been there, which is really an underpinning which you would think insurers would really need to really grow.
That's correct. I think what we've seen in their margins over the last quarter decade is pretty much our own macroeconomic scenario. We know insurers are geared towards the economy, and we could see it in the results for 2020 versus 2021. So insurers, you know, they need to look elsewhere in terms of how to innovate, how to make a difference in terms of, you know, maybe their cost structures. They've been focusing on that to bring that down, digitalizing the business, you know, the sales channels, in an effort to basically bring down the cost and up margin.
And if we look at the sort of, I mean, we saw 2020, obviously that was the first wave. 2021, I think surprisingly for many, was actually worse in terms of second and third waves. Tragically, quite markedly increased mortality. It cost them some 26 billion, which is a giant number, but they certainly, they were able to ride it. I mean, it hurt and it had some impacts, but they were in a position where they could actually manage it, which is kudos to them.
That's correct. I think it hit different insurers differently. Some insurers still had some pandemic reserves that they had tucked away for events exactly like this. Others, unfortunately, you know, take a different reserving stance. So they had to set up reserves from scratch. And like you rightly say, the cost over the 2 years, the excess death claims that were paid from what we could see from the results of these five insurers were 26 billion. At the end of 2021, we can see that the reserves that they hold are about two-thirds of what they held at the end of 2020. So I think, you know, our reading to that is the insurers think that vaccinations and immunity levels are all coming back so that to ultimately assist them to pay lower claims, which is where we are today. I mean, the big question is, in the next wave, will there be a different mutation of COVID that could be, you know, similar to a second or a third wave? But only time will tell.
Only time will tell, and that's perhaps the key point, is that we're kind of at the tail end of the pandemic, but we're certainly not out of the pandemic, and the uncertainty still remains in the sector. I mean, as you talk around, we're not sure what mortalities are going to be in the fifth wave that's currently coming. Issues around just the cost savings that they've made, whether they're still going to be sustainable, and whether they can get volumes back. This still remains a cloud of uncertainty. Maybe cloud's too strong a word, but uncertainty over the sector.
Yeah, I mean, not so much uncertainty. I think that's come through well. And I think for me, the silver lining is if we look at the persistency that we've seen on their books of business, you know, in 2020 when the pandemic hit, they all bolstered their their lapse assumptions to thinking that policyholders may not be able to pay their premiums. But actually, they've seen the opposite. People have kept their policies for good reason. I think they've come through. They've paid a huge amount of claims, and they've done it well.
I take your point, and I agree absolutely. Kudos, and that is a silver lining, and it does show a strength of an industry. A pandemic is more than a test for life insurers. We'll leave it there. Dave Holtfundenberg, insurance and accounting partner at PwC. Appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. Our poll yesterday, markets remain volatile. They remain volatile. Enough said. We're asking you if it was a buying opportunity or if you're perhaps waiting for more confirmation that markets have bottomed. Almost half of you said, yeah, you're buying, but you're buying carefully. And I think that is probably the right response. A third of you said more selling coming. And well, you were right. We saw that last night. And a fifth saying now, you know what? You're actually looking for a stronger sense of confirmation before you jump in. Have your vote, have your say on Twitter and LinkedIn. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website's in the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. And thanks to my team, Eddie Nobuchle, Nicole Tetzo, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Gary Boyson, we're going to ask him about commodities.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.